the Sphere workshop, which I think is an exciting and useful way of coming to a better understanding of different kinds of events in healthcare. I'm going to say a few words about myself, but I guess also invite you at any time when you have questions to jump in. And I'm not sure, Diana, do you want to say something about how people indicate that they want to ask a question? Can they simply talk, or how do you have to channel that?
Yep. No, what they can do is there's a box on the left-hand side, a chat box.
Okay.
You can just go ahead and type the question in. I am monitoring that, and if I don't see that you've noticed it, I will definitely flag you.
Okay.
And let you know that there's a question in progress.
So we won't be hearing their voices, per se.
And once you're answering the question or want to talk to that person, you can acknowledge that person that's written the question.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. Great.
Okay.
So thank you. So just a little bit about myself, and I'm also happy that my colleague, Daryl Horn, who is the other faculty member in this workshop, is on the line, and we'll let him say a little bit about himself as well. My background clinically is as an emergency physician, and I'm doing some primary care work as well now in a variety of different settings. But the reason I got interested in this particular issue of how best to analyze or investigate critical incidents and other kinds of adverse events in healthcare really stems from my work as the chief patient safety officer in Winnipeg for several years. During that time, I also studied in Sweden and obtained a master's in human factors and system safety, and that was helpful in, I guess, pushing me to think about how to approach investigating, analyzing, reviewing critical incidents in order to obtain as full an understanding as possible. I guess that's probably all I'm going to say about myself right now. I will add in little bits and pieces as we go through. We have a few slides that just, as I say, give you a sneak preview of what the Sphere workshop is about. I welcome any questions that you have, clarification. I'm delighted that we have such a varied group from community hospitals, a tertiary care specialized hospital, community health care setting, long-term care. So we've got a really good spectrum, and I'm looking forward to sharing some of this with you and answering your questions as much as I can. So is Daryl able to say a few words about himself? Is that possible, Diana?
Hello, everybody. I'll add my welcome as well.
Okay.
My background is in aviation, and out the gate, I was an air traffic controller as a young man and went on flew helicopters professionally for several years. Had my own experience with adverse events, after having taken a mediation course, I met Rob at a national mediation conference, and he invited me to join the work he was doing at the WRHA and as a member of their Patient Safety Advisory Committee. I got involved as a volunteer with the World Health Organization as a patient safety champion. Rob subsequently invited me to participate in his work at the WRHA by training me as an investigator. And we've been working together now for the last 7 or 8 years in that regard. I'm excited to be here today, and I sure have enjoyed the work with Sphere. I hope you find it fascinating.
Thanks, Daryl. I guess I should have mentioned Sphere is being presented by Healthcare System Safety and Accountability, and we're a group of researchers and administrators and healthcare practitioners with an interest in system safety, both internationally and across Canada. And I guess as a group, we probably have direct experience in the review or investigation investigation of several hundred events. Certainly our international advisors, Eric Hulnagel and Sydney Decker, have wide experience in a variety of different industries, and the rest of us focus almost entirely on healthcare. Certainly Daryl and I have been directly involved in several hundred healthcare critical incident reviews in one form or another over the past several years, so that we come at this after several years of, I suppose, struggling, trying to get as complete an understanding as possible. So I'm going to advance these few slides, and I will once again invite you by entering a question in the chat box. If you want me to pause or spend more time or ask a question, please do so. So here's the sneak preview of systemic nonlinear critical incident investigation, which is the complicated way of saying SPEAR. SPEAR itself stands for Shifting the Paradigm in Healthcare Event Review and Evaluation. So the questions that I think are important for us to touch on are, first of all, why should we bother reviewing critical incidents in the first place? And secondly, what kinds of methods are available to undertake a review or an investigation? Thirdly, why adopt a systemic nonlinear approach? And then finally, how does SPEAR itself as a workshop engage participants? Once again, though, if you have questions at any point along the way and you want to explore some other issues, please feel free to raise those. So I'm going to go on to the next one, which is why should we be bothered looking at critical incidents? And this is not an exhaustive list, and you probably recognize that my tongue is a little bit in my cheek with this list, but I would be interested to hear from you if you think there are other reasons why we should be looking at critical incidents. So an obvious one is that it may help us to manage risks, but there is a kind of a tricky question there. We have to ask ourselves, if we're honest about this, whose risks are we trying to manage? And very often, with the best of intentions, we focus on organizational risks, the risks of the hospital or the clinic or the facility, and not so much the risks of the patient, and then secondarily their family and support. And I have to be perfectly frank and honest with you from the outset that I think we need to be looking at these in order to be reducing risk for patients. And by doing so, I think that also will help protect organizational risk. But it is an important distinction. Sometimes different provinces have legislation. Here I've referred to the specific situation in Ontario, but it's generally true across Canada that there is legislation which leads to a certain obligation or requirement to both report and review critical incidents. So that's one reason you might do it. And your hospital or facility may have a policy. So in other words, you're perhaps involved in this because your boss told you had to do it. And many licensing bodies, both for physicians and nurses, not only encourage, but in some cases mandate us as healthcare providers to report and to assist in the review of critical incidents. So those are a whole lot of sort of external reasons, the law, the facility policy, or the professional misconduct code that may be operational for you. A good reason, I guess, is that we want to improve the quality of the care that our facility is providing and improve the safety of that care. I've sort of said that's kind of like a motherhood statement. Who can possibly be opposed to improving quality and safety of care? And then there's the problem of Uncle George's leg. Supposing that Uncle George comes for a gallbladder surgery and wakes up and finds that he doesn't have a leg, there is a fairly important issue of social justice. We kind of have an obligation to chat with Uncle George about what happened and provide some sort of explanation. So I guess what I'm trying to say here is there's all sorts of reasons why we should be looking at critical incidents, and the reason that applies may lead us to examine these in very different kinds of ways. So maybe I'll just stop for a moment and see if anybody wants to add to this list. Any questions at all? Okay. I think there's a more important reason, so I'm just going on to the next slide for looking at critical incidents. And I've said four words, the Canadian Adverse Event Study. What did we learn from this study that was led by a large number of people, and I guess the names that we usually associate with are Ross Baker and Peter Norton, Virginia Flintoff, and many others. So what did we learn? I'm assuming that all of you who have dialed in and want to think about effective ways of reviewing critical incidents would know about this study. Let me just back up one second here. It was published in the Canadian Medical Association Journal in 2004, and actually was looking at care provided in the year 2000. Now, preceding the Canadian Adverse Event Study, so the next slide, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but I imagine that many of you may have heard of the Institute of Medicine report, which was released in 1999, called To Err Is Human. It was actually based on three earlier studies, one in the 1980s and two in the 1990s in the United States, and came up with this initially rather surprising figure of 44,000 to 98,000 preventable deaths in hospitalized patients each year. Subsequent studies expanded on that number pretty significantly in the Institute for Healthcare Information in 2005, estimated that there are roughly 21 preventable deaths every hour in the United States in hospitalized patients. So we eventually got around in Canada to doing the same kind of study, and that's on the next slide. That's Baker and Norton and Flintoff, as I say, published in 2004 in the Canadian Medical Association Journal. And this study adopted the same approach, the same methodology as the large American studies and several other international studies. So we can say now that there have been 12 international studies from industrialized countries which have all used similar and reached similar conclusions. In our case, in the Canadian study, just over 3,700 were examined, patients hospitalized in the year 2000. These were randomly selected from a variety of hospitals in five different provinces across Canada. And the results showed that 7.5% of the patients experienced an adverse event associated with harm, and 1.6% an adverse event that resulted in death. And as a generalization, a 500-bed hospital will have almost 100 preventable adverse events every month. And so if you know how many beds you have in your facility, you can project the number of preventable adverse events that you might expect to have reported and to be reviewing. And so this leads to almost 2 deaths per hour in Canada in patients who are hospitalized. Now, some of you, of course, are not in hospitals or facilities that were studied. And so at the bottom of the slide, you see this question, what about all the excluded cases? And very specifically, the Baker-Norton study, similar to other international studies, did not look at pediatric cases, psychiatric cases, or obstetrical cases, and also did not look at any pre- or post-hospital care. So the question of how frequently there might be adverse events or critical incidents leading to unintentional patient harm is not outside of hospitals, was not addressed. My own sense is that we're probably looking at about 4 deaths per hour across the country, which means about 100 per day, and there are approximately 10 times as many adverse events with serious injuries, so about 1,000 a day across Canada. So significant. I think that's probably the most important reason for why we should be looking at, reviewing, investigating, analyzing critical incidents in order to understand what happened so that we might be able to make adjustments in the way care is provided to reduce the numbers, significant numbers. Now, one thing you'll notice that the Baker and Norton study looked at care provided in the year 2000, so I suppose it's possible it's completely out of date. I can say that my experience, both in Winnipeg and also investigating across the country, would not support that, and we actually do have some more recent evidence as well. And just very briefly on the next slide, a study done in the pediatric field, the Canadian Pediatric Adverse Event Study, looked at care provided in 2008. So I suppose we could say, well, that's 5 years old, and therefore we're doing so much better. That study looked at almost as many records, also drawn randomly, selected randomly. It did look at all 7 academic pediatric hospitals in Canada and 15 community hospitals with large pediatric admission rates in 7 different regions. And they did find there was some differential risk according to hospital type. In other words, more risk in the academic hospitals, the tertiary care hospitals, less so in the community hospitals, and the type of risk was different in the academic centers compared to the community hospitals. Not going to spend a lot of time talking about that unless you have questions. But overall, you'll remember Baker and Norton, the first study looking at adult adverse events in hospitalized patients, came up with the overall figure of 7.5% of patients, that is 1 in 13, would experience an adverse event associated with harm. In the pediatric version, the figure is 9.2% of patients experience an adverse event associated with harm. So I think maybe this is just my own personal windmill that I'm tilting at, but it seems to me this is far too much unintentional harm. And so the reason that it's useful to study to review, examine, analyze critical incidents, adverse events of all types, is to improve this situation. Don't know, Daryl, if you want to jump in with any comments at this point, or?
Well, that's fine, Rob. Go ahead. I'll catch in with you later.
Okay, good. The second question, and you have to jump in and tell me if I'm sort of beating you up with all these very depressing statistics. They unfortunately are the situation that we all live with. And the work of investigating and reviewing critical incidents is very challenging work, dealing with patients and families who are surprised and devastated by these occurrences, and also staff who have been trying their hardest to provide high-quality, safe care and still experiencing this percentage of unfortunate, unintentional bad outcomes. So, I'm not trying to upset you, but I think it's important to understand the context in which we're working. So the second question I thought was useful to think about was what kinds of investigations or methods of understanding critical incidents, adverse events in healthcare. And a colleague who's also one of our international advisors, Eric Hullnagel, has done a lot of work on this and historically analyzed the types of investigations and believes there are three major groups, and I've just listed them here. What he calls the simple linear approach, the complicated linear approach, which is the one that is used most frequently, and then a systemic nonlinear approach, which is more recent and is still relatively uncommon. You might know in terms of the complicated linear approach, the London Protocol or the so-called Swiss cheese way of understanding events. This is also sometimes called an epidemiological approach because it acknowledges that there may be a number of factors which combine together to eventually produce a critical incident where there's unintentional harm of a patient. The things that distinguish these three approaches really relate to context and causation. The simple linear approach generally assumes that events happen in the same way that dominoes fall. So if we simply go backwards in time, we'll eventually find the initial precipitating domino. And if we fix that, we presumably will reduce the incidence of these events. And in fact, one of the early theories, Heinrich's domino theory, was called exactly that. Not a lot of attention paid to context. It's just assumed that things happen in a fairly mechanical and linear way. A leads to B, leads to C, leads to D, and then there's some harm. And Heinrichs initially developed his theory looking at industrial accidents, not healthcare. Most of the approaches that are mandated in industrialized countries involve the complicated linear approach, and those ones do look at context to a certain degree and think it's important to discover not only factors at the active end of care, so the sharp end, but also factors that may be buried in the system that facilitated this event. And in that sense, it's a good progression from the simple linear approach. It does take into account other things that are happening. And at the same time, it does still assume that causation proceeds in a fairly mechanical way. The difference between complicated and simple linear is that the Swiss cheese or London Protocol approach acknowledge that many different factors may combine together in order to produce the conditions where an event occurred. The systemic nonlinear approaches, and that's what SPHERE is all about, certainly think that context is important. That's the systemic part. And the nonlinear part refers to causation. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but it opens up the possibility that factors or conditions may have an influence, an important influence, on events without there being an obvious connection between that condition or that factor and the ultimate event. In other words, there's an influence, but we cannot draw a simple line saying that that event, that condition caused this particular event. And it's a little bit more challenging to think about things this way, but if we begin to do so, we will discover quite a bit more information that's useful in understanding what may have happened in a given situation. Okay, I'll just stop and see if there are any questions before we move on.
Rob, it's Darryl.
Yes, hi, Darryl.
I thought maybe I'll just toss in a couple of comments here. I'm sort of a colloquial story to go along with the domino theory.
Yep.
The way I've often explained the difference between simple linear, complicated linear, and systemic nonlinear in relation to a domino fall, a simple linear thing, you could line up 10 dominoes and push them over and watch them fall. You'd understand if there was one domino missing how things might not work properly. Complicated linear, or a more complicated system, I know you've seen from time to time they have big domino falls that fill gymnasiums, and they're huge, but they're still very, very directly connected in the same manner. The best description I could come up with for understanding things in terms of systemic nonlinear fashion, if you can imagine a scenario, it's New Year's Eve in a nuclear power plant. They're short-staffed in the control room, and at some point in the evening, the operator wanders off to the coffee room, and while grabbing a cup of coffee, looks up at the TV and sees the dominoes falling on the television and lingers just a little longer to watch the successful completion of the domino fall. When he returns to the control room, all the red lights are flashing. And our experience in investigating adverse events is that that's usually a better description of the thing that went wrong. It's not so much in the nuances of cardiac surgery, whether they, you could say cut the red wire or the right or the green wire, it's where were the wire cutters. And it's, less clinical, less linear, less predictable. It's more these sorts of outside influences that we have to entangle in understanding the stories.
Yeah, good. The other element of nonlinear causation has to do with what's sometimes called the butterfly effect, and this is the fact that in complex systems, very small changes can lead to very major consequences. And that's kind of surprising, so that just expanding on the example that Darryl brought forward, sometimes a decision made with absolutely the best of intentions 5 or 10 or 15 years earlier may have a significant impact and be a major influence on the development of a particular event. And coming to an understanding of that is, we believe, very important if we want to eventually have some impact on the factors that lead to patient harm, unintentional patient harm in association with adverse events. Some people will say to us, this is way too remote, this is not something we can influence, and it's certainly true that it becomes more challenging to figure out how to improve the situation, but I think if you approach the event trying to understand all of the factors that may have influenced it, then you need to be honest about the influence of events that may be very remote and not obviously causative in a classical sort of way. So, and that's what we try to do with the Sphere Workshop, is show you through different approaches how it's possible to come to that sort of understanding. So I'm just going to go on now to a couple of other questions. This question of why would we adopt a systemic approach? In a sense, I've touched on this when I said that context is quite important. And in that sense, you can say that, for instance, the Swiss cheese approach is, to a certain extent, systemic in the way it looks at cases. We talk about systemic in terms of systems thinking. So you will have heard of things like the whole is more than just the sum of the parts. When you look at mechanical systems, take a Coke machine, it's possible for you to describe all of the parts, how they're put together, how they relate to each other, and you will be able to come up with a full understanding of how that works. So that's a very simple, closed, mechanical system. But when it comes to more complex systems, it's important to realize that it's often not just the characteristics of the parts, but the way they relate to each other, which defines the properties of that system. And that's the emphasis, I guess, that we put in Sphere and in trying to understand critical incidents. We ask a simple question: what kind of a system are we working in? And many of you may have heard of Paul Plisek. He's done some interesting work on this question, wrote an article talking about the distinction between simple, complicated, and complex systems. The example of a simple one is baking a cake based on a recipe. Example of a complicated one might be building a nuclear submarine, where it's true there may be millions of parts, but you are able to describe each and every one and how they are put together and how they relate and so on and so forth. And his examples of a complex system are things like raising a child and trying to improve safety and quality in healthcare. So the important question then is, I think, are the tools, are the methods that you use to understand a critical incident, an adverse event related to harm, are they appropriate for the kind of system that you're working in? And I guess it's our feeling that healthcare is very much an example of a complex adaptive system. And therefore, the tools that you use to understand events should be appropriate for that kind of a system. So what works in an assembly line, for instance, putting together a car, might work in some narrowly defined subsystems in healthcare, but overall, those kinds of mechanical approaches are likely to lead you down some unusual paths that will not necessarily improve your understanding of an event. I'm not sure if this is, does anybody have questions at this point? Is this making sense to you? Let me just pause for 1 second here.
Hi, Rob. It's Tanya.
Oh, hi, Tanya.
Hi there. I was just thinking that as you were describing it, that the complexity theory, I mean, just in reality, when you think of a system, it's composed of very diverse, interconnected, and, you know, adaptive agents, and especially a healthcare system. And indeed, it's a complex system. It's in and of itself, and it's dynamic and unpredictable.
Yeah.
So it's not surprising that you would see nonlinear patterns of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
where you would expect predictability because you have, say, clinical practice guidelines, et cetera, it really is quite adaptive. So mm-hmm. it goes back to this nonlinear pattern. So taking it apart, working backwards, you do start to question its effectiveness. And it just makes, it starts to become more crystallized in your mind that taking a more a complexity perspective on it, maybe a different a way to approach it. I'm only referencing that the business community, meaning health management, is starting to address the way it looks at how healthcare is managed from a complexity perspective as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just some thoughts I was having as you were talking.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And I guess the surprising thing for me often is how often we actually get it right. How often healthcare providers end up not harming people and, in fact, having good clinical outcomes and patients who have had a positive experience. And all of that is happening in a complex system where conditions are rarely fully adequate. We rarely have all the time we need or all the resources we need or all of the feedback loops, controls, and so on and so forth. And so it is exactly the adaptability of healthcare providers to find ways to provide safe quality care in the face of inadequate conditions, which is really the surprising thing. So I agree with you entirely that it begins to make much more sense when you apply a complexity framework to these kinds of reviews and investigations. Okay, let me just go on to, this is just sort of some philosophy about nonlinearity. Caleb has written some interesting books, The Black Swan, Anti-Fragile, and made the comment at one point that in the real world, Mother Nature did not endow us with clear rules. So there's a lot of uncertainty, unpredictability. We can't fully describe the things we're dealing with in complex systems. And then Peter Senge, who's always inspired me, said the world is made of circles, and we think in straight lines. So it's not surprising that even when we review a case with the best of intentions, if we're doing so with a linear approach, it's not surprising that we will come up with at least an incomplete understanding. And so it gets back to this question that you see at the bottom of that slide. Is healthcare similar to an automobile? Yes, I have to improve my grammar there. An automobile assembly line. I think probably not going to be a hard argument for me to persuade you that it rarely is similar to an automobile assembly line. And yet we seem to be very comfortable using techniques that work in helping us to understand problems on automobile assembly lines. So that's really what Sphere is about, trying to open the way you think about these problems so that you can come up with as full an understanding as possible. And I guess just so I've tried to wrap it all up as the underlying philosophy behind Sphere, we think that healthcare is a complex adaptive system, albeit not as typical as others. We don't really know what this means. Instead, we often think of ourselves just as being very complicated. And we have trouble learning from the experience of other complex adaptive systems. So generally, we recognize there are lots of challenges. We ask good questions, and then we apply linear tools. And, well, maybe I'm being too strong when I say come up with the wrong answers, but we come up with very incomplete answers. And that sort of begs the question, how do we expect to improve the situation if we don't have as complete an understanding as possible? So let me just last slide. slide, I think, talk briefly about the actual approach that we use in the Sphere workshop. It's a two-day workshop. There is, at the very bottom of the slide, you'll see there's a manual, a 60-page sort of overview that touches on the theoretical and philosophic basis. And you can download this from the Healthcare System Safety and Accountability website. There's no charge for that. That won't, it'll give you a certain flavor, but it, but the essence of the workshop is one which applies not only adult learning principles, but principles that are appropriate to complex systems. So we put a lot of emphasis, for instance, on understanding dialogic conversations, how to have such a conversation. We discourage, shall we say, interviewing by menu. In other words, I have 15 questions, and I'll go through all of them, and once you've given me your answers, I'll figure it all out. You'll see the comment, letting the stories breathe. Because complex systems, really their characteristics depend much more on the interrelationships of the various subsystems and teams and components and so on, the best way to understand is through narratives or stories that, in fact, highlight those relationships. And so part of a useful and fairly comprehensive systemic nonlinear investigation is one that lets those stories breathe. And I borrowed this phrase from my colleague Art Franks, who has written a book with that title. He's a medical sociologist that I think you would find interesting to explore. So we do spend quite a bit of time thinking about practicing dialogic conversations as a way of obtaining important insights into particular events. As I've referred before, we encourage a sort of nonlinear approach to causation so that we shouldn't always expect to find the dominoes that have fallen and led to a particular event. And interestingly, we encourage a very fluid approach to the way the event gets mapped out chronologically. All of this is using case studies. There are several that are pre-circulated, and we encourage participants to bring their own challenging situations or their own cases, all completely de-identified, and then we would use the workshop as a way of coming to a different understanding or a fuller understanding. So overall, the Sphere workshop presents you with a way of thinking about critical incidents that arise in complex systems. It provides you with both methods and tools to take back to your organization that will help you to come to an understanding of those situations where, unfortunately, there has been unintentional patient harm. Maybe I'm going to stop at that point. There is, I can't remember now, Diana, do they have access to these slides after the fact? You'll be posting these? Or?
I can, yes. That's what's agreed upon. Yeah, I can send them with a copy of the tape. We are recording this session.
Sure, okay. So just, there is one other slide I remember now.
Okay.
Well, maybe I could just add a couple of comments at that
point.
Yeah,
for sure. Thanks, Daryl.
I'm just going to say another way of looking at it. We've looked at the methodology at the way we teach how to do investigations very much as a form of qualitative research, and this is a methodology for good qualitative research, in our opinion. it's very specific to adverse events in healthcare, although it draws on a lot of different experience. But the one thing I'd really like to emphasize, and you know, everybody has their own experience right now. Maybe you've already done some investigations using a different model. Sort of regardless of your background, very much like to suggest that that being an investigator, regardless of whether that's your main job or something you do occasionally or something other people do for you, that the ability to investigate is a core competency unto itself, and it has to be cultivated. And I think, when Rob took over as the Chief Patient Safety Officer in Winnipeg, realized that there is no tree with investigators hanging from it. A lot of people believe that the domain expertise, being a long experienced nurse or physician or perhaps administrator, although they understand the nuances of their discipline very well, it doesn't confer any special powers as an investigator, unfortunately. And there are very deliberate and specific techniques. We've borrowed a great deal of our technique from areas in different industries, high reliability industries like aviation and that, where there are some very, very definite and long-standing successful tools in investigation protocols, so to speak, the way an investigation is conducted. And we've tried to introduce that into our specific way of doing things. So you can look at, like I said, investigations is a core competency that just doesn't occur naturally because you have a lot of experiences as a healthcare provider. It's an acquired discipline. And we try to give you some very, very specific tools and sphere, teach you how to be an investigator and teach the mindset of an investigator. You know, one of the most difficult things to do in conducting any investigation is to set aside our own biases and to get out of the role of being a judge of some sort of other people's actions, but to look at it from that third point of view, from the role and from the viewpoint of an investigator. So something we hope we can offer you in the Sphere course.
Good, thanks. These numbers here are really just for fun. If I was to take you to Las Vegas and to say there's these three different tables that you can make a wager at and ask you which one you would prefer, but I hope your first question would be, are these odds related to winning or losing? And if they're related to winning, I'm guessing that you would pick 1 out of 13. And if they're related to losing, I guess you would pick 1 out of 160,000. And so those are real numbers. They date from 2008. And the first one refers to the risk for me as an emergency physician to be sued as a result of patient care. So I have to see 160,000 patients in 2007 in Canada before I'm sued. The next figure is my risk as an emergency physician when I was practicing in the province of Manitoba, that I would have to see 30,000 patients before I would have any kind of a potential disciplinary action from the College of Physicians and Surgeons. And 1 out of 13, of course, is the Baker and Norton figure. So that's the risk for me as a patient of having an adverse event associated with significant harm. And the strange thing is that the resources that are available for the rare events are enormously larger than the resources available for the common events. And it's just something to think about as to why we have things turned on their heads, why overall across the country for patient safety efforts we have made maybe $40 or $50 million available, whereas for litigation support for hospitals and physicians and nurses, we have roughly $3.5 to $4 billion. So it's an interesting question that I think merits some reflection. Now, I have to say that I've always found webinars a little bit intimidating. So if any of you have questions and you want to follow up with us, here's how you can reach either Daryl or myself. And please, you're welcome to visit the website, see some of the activities we're involved with, have a look at the manual for the Sphere workshop, and we would look forward to any of you joining us at the next one, which is on November 28th and 29th at York University. Are there other questions or any wise summary comments, Diana or Daryl?
I just say if there's anybody out there who wants to unmute and just ask us a question, we don't have 100 people in the chat room, so please feel free to speak up.
Hello. I guess not.
Everybody's quiet today.
Yeah. So, Vicky.
Vicky.
Okay. Yeah. We have not yet. So Vicky asks if there are any other workshop dates after the November 28th and 29th. And so there's a simple answer to that, and that is no. We have not yet set the dates for for 2014. Depending on where you are working and how many other people might be interested, we also do customized courses, so that most of the workshops are taking place at York University, at the Healthcare Learning and Leadership Network, but in the Faculty of Health. But we also, so in the cost of the workshop, is you'll find that on either the HSSA or York website. And thank you, Carrie, that it's depending on whether you sign up as an early bird or at a later time, and maybe either Tanya or Diana can confirm this for me, it's either $850 or $900.
Yeah, it's $950 per participant at this time.
Yes, for the two-day workshop.
Yes, and our website, I'm going to put that right on there, is on hlln.ca, and you can just go to the Critical Incident Review Training program, and all the information for registration form and price and everything is all in there.
And we're still working on our calendar for 2014, so as dates get booked, they will be sent out on the email. So we now have your email address since you signed up, so we'll be sure to let you know when we have some 2014 dates for this course.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is something that Daryl and I, so there is a principle I haven't mentioned at the workshop, at least the presenters absolutely have to have fun during the workshop. So, and we hope that also applies to the participants. And so we're very committed to this. There definitely will be some more workshops, and it's a matter of sorting out dates and making sure they don't conflict with other meetings or with other activities. But thank you for asking that question.
Okay. Tanya, you have anything else you'd like to add?
I think Rob's covered it. Thank you so much, Rob, for the presentation today. It was really informative. I always find this topic fascinating, at the same time a bit terrifying as a user of the system. But I'm so glad to see that there's a large body of research that continues to grow out there, and that people like yourself and Daryl are also out there working on methodologies that we can continue to use and improve our system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll tell you, the really exciting thing is that there is now a group of about 125 international researchers and healthcare providers and managers who are looking at these questions and making a lot of progress in understanding how the question of organizational resilience is linked directly to the occurrence of adverse events and patient harm. And so this kind of approach, the Sphere Workshop, is an initial building block in helping us to adopt that kind of comprehensive and integrated approach to improving the way care is provided. So I hope to see some or all of you at an upcoming workshop, and thank you very much for dialing in and for sharing questions and for listening. And I guess we'll, is that going to be a wrap-up then?
That should be a wrap-up. Thank you very much, Rob. That went very well. And everybody can, as soon as you hang up, it automatically will release.
Okay.
And then I can leave the system up for a few minutes if anybody
needs
that, and then I will talk to you soon. Thank you, everybody, for attending.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.